This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 566 of the genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. It has been 53 days of a complete siege on the Gaza Strip, while Israeli forces accelerate the forced displacement of Palestinians, pushing them into smaller and smaller areas, and while bombing and airstrikes continue nonstop, killing dozens of people, including many children, every day. Between March 18th, when Israel broke the so-called ceasefire and resumed its mass-scale slaughter in Gaza, and today, nearly 1,900 Palestinians have been killed and 5,000 have been injured. That figure includes 600 children killed and approximately 1,600 children injured in just 5 weeks. On Tuesday, April 22nd, the Israeli army shelled the Al-Dura Children's Hospital in Gaza City amid a barrage of attacks on the Tufah neighborhood. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported that Israeli airstrikes also targeted and destroyed the solar panels on the roof of the hospital, rendering what was left of its pediatric services non-functional. On Wednesday, another attack in the same neighborhood in Gaza City targeted the Jaffa School, which had been turned into a shelter for displaced families. At least 10 people were killed and many more were injured as fires engulfed people's tents in the courtyard and sheltering families inside the building. Journalist Abdelkader Sabah reported that 4 classrooms were targeted overnight, and in the morning, people gathered in the wreckage of the courtyard to mourn children who were killed in the attacks. Sabah said that, quote, "the large number of martyrs has become normalized." Survivors of the attack, speaking to Al Jazeera, described scenes of absolute horror. An injured man told the agency that, quote, "My 3 cousins, 3 children, were lost. They were pulled out completely charred." Another survivor said, quote, "We were asleep when suddenly we saw a light like the light of the Day of Judgment, fire everywhere. I grabbed my daughters and ran. They were injured and their father was in the bathroom. The girls were screaming for him and we lost each other. As we were fleeing, they bombed the school again. People were screaming, women were crying and searching for their relatives. I don't know what to say. People here were burned, burned alive," she said. Medics at nearby Al-Shifa Hospital could only assist by sterilizing the wounds, as there were no bandages available to use, Al Jazeera said. In Jabalia in northern Gaza, also on Wednesday, Israeli forces attacked a residential building, and when civil defense rescue workers came to provide care for the wounded, the Israeli army bombed the building again in a so-called double-tap strike. Israeli forces have continued to bomb the tents of displaced people in Al-Mawasi, on the sand dunes in southern Gaza, where earlier in the genocide, Israel designated the area a, quote, "safe zone." On April 19th, an Israeli airstrike targeted the tents of displaced families in Al-Mawasi. Just days later, on April 22nd, at least 10 Palestinians were killed in another airstrike on Al-Mawasi. A week ago, on April 16th, as we reported, an Israeli attack on Al-Mawasi killed at least 10 Palestinians, including children, one of whom used a wheelchair. Catherine Russell, the executive director of the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, stated, quote, "Airstrikes on tents in Gaza reportedly killed 15 children, including a child with disabilities who burned to death," noting that images of children burning while sheltering in makeshift tents should shake us all to our core. Other attacks were reported this week in Burej refugee camp and in Deir Bala in central Gaza. Because of the last 53 days of Israel's complete humanitarian siege on Gaza, the hunger and medical situation is rapidly deteriorating into catastrophe. According to Euromed Human Rights Monitor, quote, "families in the Gaza Strip have been forced to cut the number of their daily meals, resulting in noticeable weight loss among residents. In the near total absence of fresh and nutritious food, most people now rely almost entirely on the enclave's limited supply of canned goods, while many others have become fully dependent on food banks for their daily meals. However, these food banks have come under intensified Israeli military attacks in recent weeks, further depriving residents of access to even the most basic food necessities. The human rights group added that, quote, "The starvation imposed by Israel on civilians in the Gaza Strip represents one of the most severe and inhumane forms of genocide, as well as a grave violation of human dignity. It extends beyond the mere denial of food, and it also seeks to dismantle the population's ability to survive by destroying livelihoods, obstructing humanitarian aid, targeting sources of food production, and deliberately disrupting essential supply chains. The consequences of this policy extend far beyond the present," Euromed warned, "threatening the very future of Palestinians as a national group by creating a generation at risk of long-term physical, psychological, and cognitive disabilities. Israel reveals a deliberate and destructive intent, one that aligns with the defining characteristics of genocide under international law." Recently, Jonathan Wittall of the United Nations Humanitarian Office described the situation in Gaza as, quote, "deprivation by design amid Israel's deliberate dismantling of Palestinian life."
In Gaza today, people are being deprived of the basic necessities for human survival. It's been more than 45 days of total blockade, total closure. Nothing has entered. No food, no relief supplies, no fuel, no commercial goods, nothing. This is deprivation by design. Hospitals and health centers are running low on supplies, while beds are filling up with mass casualties that continue to enter as the airstrikes are intensifying across the strip. Water supply has dramatically decreased. UN warehouses of food are running empty. We've had to close the UN-supported bakeries. There's no cooking gas left. People are burning trash just to heat the remaining food that they have left. At the same time, Gaza is being suffocated. Almost 70% of the strip is now either in a displacement zone or a no-go zone where people can't reach. Land's being annexed from the north, from the east, from the south of the strip as forces advance. When fishers go out to the sea, they're shot at, they're killed. Gaza's being starved, it's being bombed, it's being strangled. This looks like the deliberate dismantling of Palestinian life. The blockade needs to be lifted, humanitarian aid needs to be facilitated to enter, and the ceasefire needs to be reinstated. Lives depend on it.
That was Jonathan Wittall of the UN Humanitarian Office. Israel targeted and destroyed dozens of heavy equipment vehicles belonging to the Palestinian Civil Defense in Gaza on April 21st and 22nd. According to the Jabalia municipality, an Israeli military strike destroyed all 9 wheel loaders that were donated and sent in during the January ceasefire, in addition to a sewage suction truck and a 5-cubic-meter mobile water tanker. Furthermore, a manhole maintenance vehicle, 5 service vehicles, a 936 loader, 2 tractors, a garbage compactor truck, a solar distribution tanker, and a mobile generator to operate water wells all sustained partial damage. The municipality announced that all of its services, including street clearance, waste removal, sewage line maintenance, and water services, have been completely suspended, exacerbating the already dire situation and heightening the risk of disease. Journalist Abdelkader Sabah reported from the scene in Jabalia, noting that these vehicles were also necessary to recover victims from underneath the rubble. He stated that this was yet another way that the Israeli army is trying to dismantle all humanitarian services inside Gaza. The Gaza government condemned Israel's attacks on these vehicles as, quote, "criminal. The targeting of municipal headquarters by Israeli occupation aircraft and the bombing of heavy equipment designated for rescue and rubble removal, including bulldozers and other machinery, is a criminal continuation of the war of extermination," the Hamas political party said in a statement. Quote, "The systematic destruction of livelihoods and civilian facilities in the Gaza Strip will not succeed in pushing our people to surrender to the malicious displacement plans, nor will it succeed in dissuading them from clinging to their land, their determination, and that of their sons in the valiant resistance to confront and defeat the aggression and to achieve our legitimate rights to freedom and self-determination," end quote. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of Fatima Hassouna, the photographer who made a difference, by Asma Abdul, writing from Gaza. On last week's live stream, we reported on Israel's assassination of the photojournalist Fatima Hassouna, who was killed along with her entire family in an Israeli strike on their home in Al-Tufah, a neighborhood of Gaza City, on April 16th. Asma, who was Fatima's childhood friend, writes that, quote, "Fatima was deeply committed to her craft. She never simply documented a moment. She became part of it. She had a rare ability to earn trust quickly. The subjects of her photography were not just faces or stories. They were people she befriended. Fatima's camera wasn't a barrier. It was a bridge. She always said that she wanted not just to carry a message, but to show kindness to the people she filmed or photographed. At Fatima's core was a sense of purpose. She came from a place of love. We lived just a street apart in Gaza City all our lives. After the genocide began, we would walk everywhere together. There were no taxis around, and prices were rising even higher. Each morning, Fatima would call, 'Wait for me,' she would say. 'Let's walk together.' And so we did. Those walks were more than just a means of getting from A to B. They were our little escapes. We shared everything, sorrows, secrets, silly thoughts. I never had to pretend to be anything I wasn't when I was with Fatima. There were no walls between us, just warmth and honesty. I wish that she was still around to tell her how much I loved her eye for a good photograph or image, how she saw not just the suffering in a person, but the soul behind it, how she brought dignity to every frame. Last winter, we were working in Al Yarmouk Stadium, where the conditions were especially dire. Seeing the suffering around her, Fatima said that we must help. I asked her to speak with the director of the film project she was working on about distributing blankets. She did. And soon we were part of a mission to not only document hardship, but to relieve it. That day, we weren't just storytellers. We were part of the story. And Fatima was glowing. She had done something she had always dreamed of. She had made a difference. Fatima was only 25. She was my sister, my confidant, my light. May the world never forget the name Fatima Hassouna. May the stories she told outlive the genocide that took her. And may we all learn from her to live with courage, to work with purpose, and to love always with everything we have." Those are excerpts from Fatima Hassouna, the photographer who made a difference, by Asma Abdu, writing from Gaza. Turning to the occupied West Bank, my colleague Tamara Nassar reported on the tightening restrictions of movement of Palestinians, while Israeli military raids of Palestinian cities and refugee camps reached new peaks of violence over the last 18 months. She writes that, quote, "Israel's far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich dubbed 2025 the year of sovereignty in Judea and Samaria, the pseudo-biblical name Israel uses for the West Bank in order to give its occupation and illegal colonization a veneer of legitimacy. Coupled with accelerating settler violence that surged by 30% compared to the same period last year, the Israeli government has been implementing a series of changes to policy and administration in the West Bank that is fundamentally changing the territory's character while evading international scrutiny. This is helping to realize longtime Israeli ambitions to tighten Palestinian Bantustans while enhancing continuity between Jewish settlements and present-day Israel. In the first 3 months of the year, more Israeli settlement units have been approved than in all of 2024 combined. Israel's so-called Higher Planning Council, which manages settlement activity, approved over 14,000 housing units in less than 3 months, surpassing the nearly 10,000 units approved during all of last year. This is in part due to the dramatic change in policy under the current Israeli government that reinvented the process in favor of accelerating settlement building and expansion, according to settlement watchdog group Peace Now. Smotrich was working on transferring Israeli military authority of the West Bank to civilian control by creating, in 2023, a settlement administration within Israel's defense ministry that reports directly to him. Quote, "It will be easier to swallow in the international and legal context," Smotrich said, "so that they won't say that we are doing annexation here." Just months before October 7th, 2023, the Israeli government transferred the responsibility for planning settlements to Smotrich. The government also changed the planning and approval procedures for building and expanding settlements. The prime minister's green light is no longer required, for example. That's all from Tamara Nassar's Smotrich Speeds Up Land Theft in West Bank. Be sure to read more from that report on electronicintifada.net. Meanwhile, a child was killed in Al Yamun near the northern West Bank city of Jenin on Wednesday, April 23rd. Defense for Children International Palestine reported that Israeli soldiers shot and killed 12-year-old Mahmoud Methkal Ali Abu Al-Hajja with live ammunition. Mahmoud was struck in the abdomen when Israeli forces opened fire indiscriminately from about 80 meters away. Mahmoud was carried to a private vehicle which brought him to Al-Hadaf Medical Center in Al Yamun, after which he was transferred in an ambulance to Jenin Governmental Hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival, DCIP stated. Mahmoud, alongside other boys and young men, were allegedly throwing stones toward Israeli soldiers deployed around the cemetery, while other soldiers raided a residential building nearby. According to information collected by DCIP, the Israeli military has been carrying out an ongoing military operation throughout the Jenin Governorate since January 21st. On April 17th, a week ago, Israeli forces shot and killed Jihad Adham Rebhi Adeli, a 16-year-old child, south of Nablus, during an invasion and raid into the town of Osirin. Palestinian ambulances attempted to reach the scene and provide aid, but were blocked by Israeli forces, according to documentation by Defense for Children International Palestine. Israeli authorities withheld Jihad's body. Jihad grew up in a hyper-militarized environment where no Palestinian child is safe from Israeli forces, said Ayed Abu Akhtesh, Accountability Program Director at DCIP. Now, even in death, Jihad cannot rest as Israeli authorities prevent his family from burying his body and mourning him. Jihad is one of the dozens of Palestinian children whose bodies remain withheld after Israeli forces killed them in violation of international law. Israeli forces have killed 23 Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank in 2025, according to documentation collected by DCIP. In international activism news, there were massive protests in Morocco aimed at stopping the docking and unloading of two Maersk cargo ships headed to Israel. According to the Mask Off Maersk campaign, Moroccan port workers and civil society have taken a bold stand against the flow of U.S. military cargo to Israel, halting operations on the Nexo Maersk ship, which is set to pick up F-35 fighter jet components at Tangier Med Port. These parts, to be offloaded by the Maersk Detroit, are reportedly bound for Israel's Nevatim Air Base, a key site for F-35 maintenance amid intensified bombardment of Gaza. In Casablanca, mass protests delayed the Nexo Maersk from docking for nearly 39 hours. Protests also erupted at ports in France, Tangier, Spain, and along the U.S. East Coast as part of the Mask Off Maersk campaign. At Tangier Med, dozens of port workers refused to service the ship despite the risk of employer retaliation, with at least one worker resigning in protest. Major Moroccan labor unions, including the Port Workers and Seafarers Union, the Democratic Confederation of Labor, and the National Labor Union of Morocco, issued nationwide calls to boycott ships carrying weapons tied to Israel's war on Gaza. In their statement, the Port Workers and Seafarers Union stated, "We reject outright and without compromise any participation in logistical operations that contribute to the Zionist entity's war crimes, whether by fueling, towing, or unloading the ship or any like it. Maskov Maersk says that, quote, despite the fact that Maersk has previously retaliated against Moroccan workers refusing to service ships in the past, and the heavy ongoing repression from the company, workers stood firm against the company's complicity. We call on international solidarity and organizations to support the brave Moroccan people and workers who are taking a principled stance against the flow of military equipment through their ports to facilitate genocide. We'll continue to follow these developments from the global Maskov Maersk campaign. But finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. 1 week ago, on April 17th, our contributor Abu Bakr Abed published a personal statement and a video on Twitter about his decision to leave Gaza for medical treatment and to complete his university education. Let's play that.
I actually have no words to tell you what it means. This is the final time in Gaza. I have mixed feelings. It's a bittersweet feeling already. I'm leaving my friends, I'm leaving my family, and I don't have the words to express what is in my heart. I'm happy, but at the same time sad. I'm just filming this after more than 560 days of the genocide in Gaza. I've done everything in my power, and I believe that I need to continue, but this is not my decision. It's just the decision that I took out of complete necessity, and it's already medical, and I just want to continue, and I promise I will continue. I will not leave my friends, I will not leave my family. I'll continue doing my part, I'll continue being here, I'll come back here as soon as possible to defend this homeland. But this decision is just something that I had to take out of a big, big, big necessity. And just thanks to everyone, to my family, my friends, my Rahman, to Khalid, to everyone of my family, my mother, my father. And I believe, and I promise, that I will do everything that I can to make sure that Palestine will be free. But today is the temporary end of a journey that I spent and sacrificed every drop of blood in my veins.
Abu Bakr is now safe and sound in Ireland, where he will be continuing his studies and looking after his health. We're also proud of him. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.